The Kalamazoo Bach Festival is underway. It's a series of concerts all this week featuring a variety of events. And here's a quick rundown of events. Today being Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., you can hear a program called Bach and Jammies at the Kalamazoo Public Library Oshtemo branch. Also tomorrow, Bach's brunch concert is at 11 a.m., there's an improv workshop presented by members of the Dave Sharp World's Quartet at 2:45 at Kalamazoo College's Light Fine Arts Building. And the Dave Sharp World's Quartet will perform tomorrow night at 7:30 in the Dalton Theater. Baroque Meets Celtic is the name of the program for Friday at 7:30 p.m. That will feature harpsichord, Irish flute, violin and cello. And finally, the whole festival wraps up with the Merling Trio and Friends on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. with a program called Jazz It Up with Bach. And I am very pleased to have in the studio here two members of the Merling Trio and one of the esteemed guest artists and longtime associates. That's Susan Wiersma Uchimura, pianist, violinist Renata Artman-Knifik, and bassist Tom Knifik. Nice to have you all here this morning on WMUK.
Thank you, Kara.
This concert will feature music no one has heard before in public. So that's one exciting feature. It's always a privilege, it seems to me, to be able to premiere brand new music, bring it out into the world, and see how the audience enjoys it. Could you talk about how you came up with this idea of collaborating with a few composers for this concert? Susan.
Well, we had been asked to, the Merling Trio had been asked to perform for the closing concert of the Bach Festival this year, and all could have proceeded smoothly, I think, with us just performing our usual repertoire,
Absolutely.
Typical trio repertoire, none of which includes Bach. Bach did not write for the modern piano trio, piano, violin, cello. This being the Bach Festival, I thought, why not try to incorporate some Bach into some sort of formulation that could be performed by a piano trio? So I just, the creative juices sort of started flowing, and I think at some point I was contemplating maybe arrangements of preludes and fugues. It isn't that it came to me all in a flash that this is what we're going to do. It went through lots of different scenarios, but the Italian concerto, I think, is somewhat ideally formulated for performance by strings, because it comes somewhat from a concerto format where an orchestra would be performing part of the music. In addition to that, it's really, I think, a favorite piece of all of ours. It's such a wonderful work. I know that Tom and Renata heard it at their house for years because they talked about their son Gene practicing it it being a favorite piece of his. And then the fact that it had three movements maybe lent itself to perhaps the ideas of three composers. So I think that's where that came in. And then in recent years, the trio has been working on crossing boundaries in terms of music. This would be crossing a boundary in terms of bringing Baroque into our repertoire. Another boundary crossed would be bringing another style, being jazz. And so that's where the jazz element came in. And we had the composers not only arrange the movements as is, but then do follow it with a jazz takeoff based upon each movement.
Oh, is that right? Okay. So it's an expanded Italian concerto.
Exactly.
Yes.
With one thing I think we should just establish, even though it should be obvious maybe, but it's not that you don't like playing Bach. It's just that Bach didn't write for piano trio.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Yes. If he had, we would be all over it. But.
Yes. He wrote for strings and like sonatas, but it's harpsichord. So there is keyboard, obviously, writing and some string writing, but in no way matching piano trio situation.
All right.
So Bach, being, I just think it lends itself so beautifully because of its harmonic structure. And whenever I look at my husband's music, there are majority of it are just signs of harmony that he creates all the music in jazz. So it just seems so matching in ideas, because Bach, really, all the beautiful melodies that we get to play, they're basically improvisations and his time. So I think it's just great to be able to take off from that. You know.
The element of improvisation is present in music from all periods.
Yes.
It seems, though, that more people are, you know, learning that it's a more important component than they realize, perhaps. Mm-hmm. After all the training you get in playing beautifully and reading, the improvisation aspect is a muscle that also needs to be built up in every young musician.
Yeah. And even if you play music that is all written out, there is still the personality of it comes out when you digest the music to the point that you spelling it out for your you are spelling it out, not reading out something that comes off the page. So although some of us don't improvise, that aspect of being free with music is always present, I think.
Would you tell us about the rest of the program so we get an idea of that from the top of the show?
Sure. I'll just kind of run through from the beginning to the end quickly. So three movements of the Italian Concerto, each arranged for the Merling Trio, you know, intact, which is an interesting thing because, you know, Bach is so revered, as all great composers are, but he in particular seems to be in marble more than a lot of other, you know, people in history. And so kind of rearranging that is a really interesting thing. But I think they worked out beautifully. I've heard all three movements of the concerto, and I think it makes perfect sense, you know, and it's going to bring another aspect to the trio's repertoire. They can present something to audiences everywhere that they would have not heard otherwise, and such endearing music melodically and harmonically. And then so each will be played in its original arranged format, followed by the jazz-inspired composition. And each of those have a completely different take. There's three composers. You might not be surprised that they'd all kind of run off in different ways. So the first movement was assigned to Adam Shoemaker, who's a local teacher and composes and plays. And he took for his inspiration, it's funny because everybody gets inspiration from, it's funny to track down people's inspiration, where they get it and how they run with it. So, you know, the jazz idiom is not really central to his writing or his musical being, but I think very lovingly he came to a very famous recording that Miles Davis did of Someday My Prince Will Come, which was originally from Snow White, and Miles Davis made it like an absolute jazz classic. You know, many people can just like hear it. And so he found enough melodic similarities between the first movement of the Italian Concerto and that he used that as the vehicle. He literally is using the harmonic structure of it. The improvisation is based off of that. And he actually transcribed a little bit of Miles's solo from it. And I guess Susan and I get to play it at one point together, and it gets kind of thrown around.
Oh, wow.
It's a really surprising idea. It's cute. It's really cute that way. And even some of Wynton Kelly, who plays the piano, famous piano introduction to that recording, about 16, 17 bars, and all of a sudden Susan's playing a little Wynton Kelly. And I think if anybody knows, most people, I think, know that recording at this point in time. And or if not, it'll sound familiar that way. Hmm. And then second movement, which was assigned to Gene, the Andante.
That would be Gene Kniffic.
Yes, of course. And he wrote a piece called Convergence. And when he started, it's fun having family that compose because, you know, we do a certain amount of it together and a certain amount of it not together, but those intersections are really wonderful. And he was thinking about the fact that there's two bass instruments in the group. There's a cello and a double bass, because I'm playing on all the jazz versions, not the arrangements of the classical. And he's trying to think of how you fit basically two bass players in a group. And I had suggested the few groups that I knew that had two bass players and some that I'd heard, you know, way back in the day and stuff. And he took to Pharoah Saunders, who had a group with two bassists. An aside, the first time I heard Pharoah Saunders was also the first time I heard Billy Hart, who was in that group. And I was about 14 at Cleveland State University. But in any event, Gene listened to those recordings and somehow found a way to get that free jazz and spiritual jazz aspect into the pieces, which is something you might not automatically think of, but he found a way to do it. And then also for melodic inspiration, he was listening to the same period, John Coltrane, a few years later, but John Coltrane's sort of spiritual works, and found a way to work melodic aspects of that into it. So the average listener might not get all that right away listening to it, but it's there. And if you hear any of those other recordings, it's obviously there. So truly a convergence.
I won't know. But I like that Gene thought of spirituality with in jazz and in Bach. You know, there's that always that element of a higher plane.
Absolutely, and particularly in the slower movements like that. I mean, it's elevated music, to be sure. And then I just got lucky. I don't remember how the movements were divided up, but I mean, I love the third movement. And as Susan mentioned, Gene always used that as like his classical warm up. As we've heard it in the house forever, and I've been humming it, and I just feel that movement. And somehow I ended up with it, and I didn't ask. I didn't raise my hand and say, "Please, ma'am," but I ended up with that, and it was just so fun to play with it, because, you know, I hear several of those themes, like universal themes, could be any period, could be like world music here, could be folk music. There's really a couple of strong melodic gems, and so I knew what Gene was doing, and I kind of knew what Adam was doing sort of, but I went with a little bit more, there's an ebullient and effervescent, like a fountain quality of that movement. So I kind of just went with that, which for me often goes to Brazil. And so there's like a Brazilian tie-in rhythm, the Berenbaum rhythm, that kind of glues it all together. And then some interesting harmony, a little bit more contemporary harmony. And so I used a couple of the themes and, you know, went off on Brazil. And so that's that. And I called it Nexus because it's a nexus of these periods of music.
This, for Renata and Susan, this isn't the first time that you've stretched into other worlds beyond classical. So at this point, it's fairly comfortable to try popular styles along with classical styles. And this concert may not present as much of a challenge as maybe the first time you stretched your wings on something like this.
We've been doing arrangements of by Gene Knifick of all the American Songbook. He's done how many, 9 or 10 arrangements for us, which definitely brings that style in, mm-hmm. and gradually becomes more freer and more comfortable to do such thing. I've dabbled with my colleagues on the jazz side with Tom and wonderful friends, where I'd recorded jazz CD and got reviewed as a jazz violinist. And it's like a language that you improvise much or not. You just, like any style, you have to, it takes me whenever we go on a road with Tom and we do his duos and then I joined like the jazz side. It really takes me a little while before I step into that world and that style of playing. They're like inflections in any, you know, any language spoken, going from baroque to romantic, or going from, you know, and also the great part about it that I find in a real jazz setting, and this has that setting because all the composers, that's why we have Tom, let Tom improvise in some sections. And that's what brings the real element of jazz. Things don't happen always in the same way. You have to be very aware of the structure of the piece, of the rhythmic drive of the piece. And so playing in real jazz setting would be you stick with drums as much as you can. Here we share the drum part,
the rhythm sections
throughout, which is also very, very interesting aspect to keep the piece going. So yes, it is easier, but yet it's still different and challenging in that way to actually do justice to all that, you know, creative spirit of it.
Also, the Merling Trio commissioned the great American composer Frank Proto. It's been more than a decade, hasn't it? And he's a fabulous writer, and it also included bass and a little bit of improvisation. And I think we did over 100 performances of it. It was a real real crowd pleaser, and it was really, you know, it's in the repertoire. It's like out there now, and four movement work, pretty substantial.
There's a wonderful recording on Centaur Records of this work. If you just tuned in, I'm talking to Renata Artman-Knifick, who is a professor of violin at Western Michigan University, has raised an entire generation of violinists at this point who have often gone, stayed with classical music, but sometimes have gone into other genres, and is a founding member of the Merling Trio with Susan Wiersma Uchimura and Bruce Uchimura, who will be on the concert, of course. It's an ensemble in residence at Western Michigan University. Susan, you are an artist in residence at Western?
That's right.
That's right. And Tom, of course, is chair of the jazz.
I'm just trying to hang out with these guys.
Yeah, I know. You just like hanging out and playing music.
You know, the other thing I was thinking as we started to speak about this, the great educator and composer, arranger, and founder of the Indiana University Jazz Program, David Baker, who we just lost last year, and was a mentor of mine, his entire career talked about the connection between bebop and the Baroque. And for him, they were almost the same thing in both the harmonic structures and using cymbals to note those structures, the way that melodies and either improvised lines or seemingly improvised lines float over those structures. And he wrote and spoke about that, I mean, since I can remember, since I was in school. So for me, it's not a stretch to see it and hear it that way. I've been told that it's been that my entire life. Yeah. And it turns out it's true.
So you could make 200 years vanish in a moment by putting together bebop and jazz.
There's a lot of connection between the two, a lot of real viable connections.
Wonderful. Well, one thing that's missing right now is having the sounds of the Italian Concerto by Bach in our ears, so we can maybe try to imagine what might happen Saturday night at the Bach Festival Finale. The concert is at 7:30 p.m. Jazz It Up with Bach, it's called, and full details, ticket information is available at KalamazooBachFestival.org. I want to hear a little bit of all three movements.
Great.
So
go for it.
I think the last one we described that Tom was talking about was the final movement. This is the work that you adapted. So we'll start at the end.
Thank you.
And maybe work a little ways from there. Thank you. That's music from the Italian Concerto by Johann Sebastian Bach. And he was stealing or borrowing ideas from the Italian composers of the day. And what's exciting about Saturday's performance of this work is that it's been expanded to the setting of a piano trio, and then each movement has been reworked as a jazz piece in some way or another. One, the first movement by Adam Shoemaker, second movement by Gene Kniffic, and this final movement we just heard by Tom Kniffic here. And you did describe a little bit how you're treating it with mm-hmm. a sort of Brazilian feel.
It's a straight eighth and the ebullience that sort of, I just see it like a fountain, you know, that sort of bubbly groove that Brazil seems to be unable to not produce. They just, it just comes out of that country.
And Bach himself in this piece feels extremely joyful to me. Susan, you're the pianist. I assume this is a piece that is in your repertoire and that you've worked on.
Yes, I've taught it many times. Each movement is individually great. It's wonderful as well as an entire work. You know, Bach is perhaps, as a composer, you can say about him that all of his works are great, I think. And you can't say that about every composer. I think if someone has a bad work of Bach to show me, I haven't seen it yet, which is just remarkable for how much he wrote. But this piece in particular, as you said, is so joyous. Both first and last movements. The second movement provides a wonderful contrast, beautiful contrast.
Well, let's take a quick listen to the themes of the second movement, and we'll be back with the Merling Trio. A reminder that the Merling Trio will present the season finale concert of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Week on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Theater of the Light Fine Arts Building at Kalamazoo College. We're working our way backwards through the Italian Concerto of Johann Sebastian Bach with the Merling Trio. Susan Wiersma Uchimura, Renata Artman Kniffic, and Tom Kniffic are here today to preview their performance on Saturday at 7:30 p.m. in the Dalton Theater of the Light Fine Arts Building at Kalamazoo College. This is a Bach Festival event, and in fact, it's the finale of the festival. And ticket and more information is available at KalamazooBachFestival.org. These are three of the musicians appearing on the concert. There are a couple more. Bruce Uchimura will be playing cello. And Renata, you have a former student joining you in the program?
Yes, Mjaltin Zsezsa. He will join us for Schubert Quintet, the famous Trout Quintet.
That's right, you need a violist.
Yes, yes. And Mjaltin is a wonderful violinist and violist. In fact, when he graduated from, he's originally from Albania and came here to study at Western. And he after graduating from Western, he went to New York and did with the master degree with Pinker Zukerman on violin, and then continue with artist diploma with Pinker Zukerman on viola. Mm-hmm. So he is doing great things. He lives in New York. He is teaching quite a bit, a wonderful pedagogue. He comes here every summer to teach at the seminar. So we get opportunity to, you know, have him back. Also, he is doing lots of work as a concertmaster and chamber musician. So very busy freelancer on both. He's concertmaster, Mozart Orchestra of New York, New York Classical Symphony Orchestra, and Mid-Atlantic Symphony in Baltimore. So he's really doing wonderful things and still hasn't changed. He's like a wonderful teddy bear.
He just came here this past April and did a residency with our students here at Western. He worked with the orchestra. He gave a class in excerpts, is
yes.
that right?
Excerpts and listened to students perform and also perform for them. Susan sat in and he played some Mozart concerto and some also Tchaikovsky concertos.
Gave master classes.
Yes, yeah. So we truly have a wonderful relationship. And so he's going to come and be the violist for Trout Quintet, which is in itself, so we have this incredible Bach and then a fantastic Schubert Trout Quintet. What can we say is one of the greatest works written.
I can say that I am jealous because you and your colleagues have been able to play this for years and years and know it inside and out. And it really is an honor, you know, a privilege to play a masterwork like this.
Yes.
That's the exact word for it.
Yes, masterwork. It's always, every time we play, I personally always find another little secret or little difference in interpretation. And we've played a lot. We've played a lot on the road with Tom. We played in Nebraska.
Yes, we were just trying to think of the states that we've performed this together in. Georgia, just this during the current season, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Last year, we did a tour of Nebraska and South Dakota in Mount Rushmore area, so we trouted there as well. And now that I'm thinking about it, we've also played it in Ohio at Ohio State University.
Oh, right.
That was several seasons ago.
That was much
so
fun.
It's a work that does not get old, as Renata said. Every time you play it, there's a new discovery to be made.
Schubert had I guess it was a birthday. It was his birth year. Gosh, my memory, he was born in 1797, so I guess the 200th anniversary was back in 1997.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, gosh, recently he had a...
Yeah.
Well, the piece is going to be 200 years old next year.
Yes.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yes. He was 22 when he wrote that, which is, to me, is mind-boggling. And, of course, the centerpiece is the variation movement based on the song, The Trout. And it's the interesting part is about variations that differs from like Beethoven variations. Schubert goes through entire movement. In each variation, he doesn't twist or change the song. It's introduced in different instruments or by a couple of instruments, but he never varies the real song, which is usually people go and do, you know,
that's the
different,
first thing you do.
You
stretch it out or put it in a different key.
But he doesn't. He changes moods. He changes accompaniments from melodic to more angular. But he never messes with the song, which is
was he respecting the wishes of his friend?
Who had asked him
probably.
Probably. Also, it's just he did that in other works, though, too. He took his lead and used them in a number of works throughout his life. And I think in a similar capacity, really kind of kept them intact.
Yeah.
So it was his thing. He respected the melody.
I think. And especially being real poem, real song involved. The poem is, I won't read it because it will sound like a Polish poem, but it's actually a story that it's about trout, about beautiful creek, with a clear creek with a trout and somebody observing how wonderful and clear it is, so the trout couldn't be caught because trout has all the vision. And fisherman comes and looks at the beautiful creek, muds it up, and catches the trout.
There is some
metaphor or whatever you want to call it in this whole thing. So it's not as happy as that movement ends on a happy note, but that's the real poem. That's the Fiorelle, you know.
Schubert's Trout Quintet is the final work on Saturday's program. The Merling Trio featured with friends Mialtin Dzeja and Tom Kniffick. You will be, of course, absolutely central to the Trout Quintet. It is a bass quintet.
It's certainly the most notable work of chamber music for us. There's a number of great pieces out there, but this is it, you know. And actually, I just thought there's a personal story I'd like to tell really quickly if I have time. Mm-hmm. The first time I learned it, I was still in school. It was really an ambitious and probably ill-advised project, but for my junior recital, I decided I really wanted to work on this. And my teacher, my very first teacher, had played it and recorded it with some of the top Cleveland Quartet and everything, very, very famous bass player, Lawrence Angel, also principal of the Cleveland Orchestra. And somehow we talked several members of the Cleveland Orchestra to play on my junior recital, including the assistant concertmaster and one of the cellists. I think back on this because I spoke at my teacher's memorial service last February, and I brought this up as part of it. I still have the same part that he wrote in and wrote some of his onomatopoeia for different strokes and phrasing and things. And I can't use another part. There's more tape on that part after all these years than paper at this point. But I've been using the same part since then. And I got to share that actually with his family from the stage. I got to speak about that. And I promised his family I would never use another part as long as it holds together.
And so, it's the old paper, you know, the yellow kind.
Yes, it's really something, you know.
I'd like to see that. You should bring it for show and tell sometime.
That's right.
Show it at the concert. Also, Tom will be involved in the jazz parts of the arrangements. So the regular arrangement of the Bach will be for trio, and then we need bass the improv and all the timekeeping.
Yeah.
He'll be on stage the whole time. He's earning his keep.
But I'm going to embarrass Susan though at this point. I was trying to figure out when I would say this. It's when you think of a Bach festival, it's not necessarily about a forward vision, right? It's more a reverential thing, and then you program creatively. But I think it's, and not because I got to be part of it, I think it's brilliant on her part to think of this. She could have hired any musicians and any composers, and I would absolutely think the same thing. I was just like, what a wonderful idea. And I want to thank you on behalf of the other composers, too.
Yeah. I'm sure that they're excited about it, and I think the audience is excited about seeing something really fresh like this with music that they love as well.
I'm sure of it. I'm sure it's going to be.
And in your hands, I feel like I can trust that it will be lovingly performed.
Sure. And such a great process. You get, an email nowadays, score and your part, and gradually by rehearsing, it all comes together to this movement, this music. It's working on new works. It's hard because you don't have and also so freeing because you don't have preconceived idea how it should go. And it just whole process is wonderful. You gradually just go, we have this movement today.
We have had the opportunity over the past several weeks to work with each of the three composers and receive their input on the pieces, and they of course are hearing it for the first time as well. It's different when they're playing it. I don't know how Tom, do you sort of put it
into... just kind of, it's a long story, but you're right.
Okay, we'll put it that way. And so they've made various adjustments here and there. We also took it last week to Maple Street Magnet School and played for several classes there. The composers gave talks to the classes about the compositional process, and the kids had very insightful questions, yeah. I thought.
I think the sixth graders rocked in particular.
This would they have been part of Kalamazoo Kids in Tune as well?
Not these particular.
They were just the orchestra students.
Yeah.
The sixth graders and the seventh and eighth
grade
orchestra.
Adam brought his class from
K College.
Yeah. So entrepreneurial class. Yeah. So that was interesting too.
Well, I have just enough time to wrap things up here and then play the variations movement of the Schubert, the Trout Quintet variations. One thing I want to make sure to ask is about your concert in a few weeks for Saugatuck's Chamber Music Series. That looks like a really exciting, enjoyable program. I think you alluded to it when you said that your son Gene had been making Great American Songbook arrangements for trio?
Yes.
Yes, we will be incorporating some of those into that program. So Gene Kniffick's arrangements from the Great American Songbook. I cannot recall exactly which ones we've programmed, and I think Carol will be coming in to do a radio interview with you about that at some point, too.
Oh, yes.
So listeners, I'll be sure to tell you then exactly which ones.
Okay.
Tom will be working with us again in that performance. It will also have a feature the Mozart E major piano trio.
These concerts are July 26 and 27.
Yes. Thank you for telling me that. I'm not sure I would have been able to come up with those dates.
Yeah, so.
And you'll be here for seminar as well, or?
Not all of us, but
big
yes, Mjalton is doing such a great job. I might just do masterclass, meet his students.
And your summer plans, Tom, any?
I'm just hanging out with these guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's so wonderful to talk to you all. Last thoughts on Saturday's program?
It's a very unique take on a Bach Festival Society concert and finale. And I think that people that love either the great Bach or the great Schubert are in for a real treat.
Well, Renata and Susan and Tom, thank you for coming in to preview it, and have a great night on Saturday. Details are at kalamazoobachfestival.org. And here's the set of variations from Schubert's Trout Quintet.